Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Athlete's Blueprint. I'm your host JP, and today I'm joined by go-karting sensation and GT racer Harry Rice. Starting his racing career at 8 years old, Harry has experienced the highs and lows of motorsport. Fast forward to 2024, Harry's about to start a new race series in an Aston Martin Vantage GT4. Stick around to find out how Harry convinced his mum and dad to support his racing dream, how drivers are media trained and selected for teams, the scariest and proudest moments in his career, why sponsorship is such a dirty word in motorsport, and Harry names his favourite car and favourite racetrack. So let's meet Harry.
Harry, can you talk to me a little bit about how you got started in motor racing?
Well, it probably have to go back to when I was about 7 or 8, really. I was karting up at the Sandler Park Racing Season course in Esher, and I was karting there just for years and years. And over time, we sort of got to the point where I was sort of, like, age-wise and speed-wise, outgrowing that sort of like corporate karting environment. And then we just sort of went out to a place called Service and Kart Club on like my, I think it was my 10th or 11th birthday, I'm not certain. But I was there on a birthday with a friend of mine, and the owner of the kart track said to my parents, "Have you ever thought of getting Harry into actual hopper go karting?" And then he was like, we didn't even know that existed. So then, like, eventually we just sort of like got into that through this completely random conversation at a kart track that I've never been to before. And then I then got my karting license at Thruxton, a karting centre. And then really it just sort of, well, went off from there. And then I did karting from 11 till 14. At the age of 14, I was in junior Rotax at Forest Edge Kart Club. And basically, at 14, I was too heavy to be competitive in that class. Yeah. But I was too young to go up into the heavier weight category. So I was sort of stuck in the middle, really. I was too heavy to be competitive, but I was too young to go into a faster class. So I made the choice to go into cars. And I got into cars through the JSC scholarship in 2019 now. And really, it's just sort of my car journey started from there, really. After I won that event 5 years ago, I got into things like Porsche Club Championship since then. So yeah, I mean, after that, it just sort of went all up in the air and I just sort of went crazy for racing, really.
That's awesome. And how did you know that cars would be a better suit for you?
Yeah, I mean, I mainly say because I was 12 years old and there's a horse racing track called Kempton Park. And on my 13th birthday, my parents took me there on like a young driver day in just a car park. And I was just like driving the car around. And at 13, I'm actually more suited to a car and a person there who was like 16, 17 years up. So I thought, like, if I'm being told by these driving instructors that at my age, if I'm sort of more capable than a 17-year-old, I thought then surely, like, I must suit driving a car, but sort of like on a race environment as well. And yeah, it's just how it really came together.
I love that. And when you were first getting started, what was your mum and dad's thoughts?
Oh God, I mean, as a family, we aren't really a sporting family. My dad's into most sports. He's into football, he's into tennis, he's into horse racing, the whole lot. Whereas my mum's not really into much sport apart from ski jumping. So in terms of sport, we aren't a massive sporting family. So soon, as I said, Esco Racing, they went white, as they didn't really know who to turn to or where to start. But I guess, obviously, the more years that you spend in a sport, the more people that you get to know, and it comes easier for you, I'd say. But obviously, as I've gone up into faster cars over the years, obviously, like, my mum's obviously more cautious of me doing it. But my, like, they are both all in behind me doing it, and they support it 100%. But it took a couple of years to have my mum on board in terms of the safety part of it.
So as a young guy starting out in racing, what was those first few sessions like, you know, going around the track in your car, and how did that come about? Like, where did your mum and dad search for the lessons?
Yeah, I mean, in karting, so going from just like your normal karting, sort of corporate sort type stuff into actual proper race karts, it's not that huge of a gap. Like, hers, obviously, like, it is still a go-kart chassis, but obviously they are a hell of a lot quicker, but like, it's the same sort of driving style. Like, you brake in the same way, you would sort of use inputs in the same way, but the jump from karting to cars is a much bigger step up. So I'd say it took me a lot longer to adapt from a kart to a car than from a corporate kart to a race kart. So I'd say I did 2 years in the JSEC. Basically, my first year was just to learn, because, like, as much as I knew how to drive a car, I didn't know how to properly race one.
Okay.
So it was like a lot of sort of learning and learning how to experience, because the important thing with car racing is spatial awareness. In a kart, I can turn left or turn right, and I can see everything around me. In a car, it's sort of like you're in like a little, like a hub or a little like sort of circle, and you don't really have much sort of like vision on the things around you. So the hardest thing to adapt to are definitely spatial awareness of other cars. For families, I'd say, like, if the parents aren't necessarily comfortable in a motorsport idea, I'd say just, like, go to an event where your child isn't taking part in. Like spend, I don't know, I think it's like £40 to go and watch a touring car weekend per person. Like, even if you just go and watch a touring car weekend and you see the environment of how passionate everybody is, of how happy that people are just to be there, and you can actually sort of see that the industry is not as scary as you think it is. Because there's a lot of people there are very friendly, as like, because me and my family were literally completely new into the industry. So as soon as we got into car racing in the JSEC, it sort of became sort of the normal thing. Because as soon as you start, like, it seems quite daunting. You have these multi-millionaires who are spending crazy money doing this, and you think, not sure what to do here. But there are a lot of people out there who will actually make life easy for you. And yeah, like, just go to some sort of race event and just go to the paddock, see the team, see how they operate, speak to them.
You know, in terms of those first initial sessions and going down to the paddock and seeing the atmosphere and getting a taste for it, how was you introduced to the the car you drove, or the car you started off with, or the, you know, how did that come about? Did your parents have to buy you a car, or how did that work?
Yeah, so it works in terms of the vehicle rental aspect is you kind of the buy car yourself, so you can buy your own car or cart, and you can have a team basically do all of the mechanical work on the cart for you, or the teams will own cars or cars, and you can hire the vehicles off of the team, which is obviously cheaper than just buying your own car. So as I've done for my whole career is I've hired cars off of teams and just sort of like to get a see how I like it. Like, if you're new into racing and you just like go out there and just buy a car, after you buy it and you drive it, you might absolutely hate driving the car. So it's important to actually have a taster of maybe testing a couple of different cars in different teams who race in completely different championships to actually get a feel of what you like the best. Because you can race in rallycross, you can race in circuits, you've got drift championships, you've got cars that are front wheel drive, rear wheel drive. Like, there's so many different things out there in motorsport you can do. If you're unsure on the avenue to go down, have a little play.
I think that's a good one. I mean, when I was younger, you know, it's definitely something I wanted to get into, and I wish,
yeah,
I had done more, or kind of like forced it. Was you, as a kid, were you quite, yeah, like, Mum, Dad, I need to go down to the track, please, please, please take me?
Yeah, like, as well, because even now, like, I'm a person that's very energetic all the time. Like, I'm always heard of energy, I'm always talking to everyone, and like, I was the sort of person, even then, like 12 years old, of where I would say to them, oh, there's a race going on at, say, Brands Hatch. Well, let's go and watch it, and let's go and see who we can speak to. So, obviously, for them, like, they work in normal jobs. And obviously, it's very hard to spend your weekends at a racetrack and you've had a whole week at work and you just sort of want to lay on the sofa and watch TV. So, like, as much as it is hard on the drivers, it's like side of the camp to train and to stay in the support, it's also quite hard on the parents, because it also basically completely takes over their own lives as well. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, as in the support, you meet loads of people that are friendly and you find loads of friends. So it's for parents that are unsure about so like spending their weekends at racetracks with their kids, I promise you, it's not as bad as you think it is.
And when you've gone to the first few sessions and you get a taste for things, and you tell your friends and you say, "Hey guys, I'm gonna become a racing driver." How did that go down?
Yeah, that was a weird one. So it was karting. Like, I never really saw it like as anything, so I had to really speak about it. Like, has anyone go karting? But it was 2019 after I won the JSCC scholarship. That was when my friends sort of thought, whoa, okay, he's 14 racing in a car and he can't even go on the roads yet. Like, I think that was the moment of when they thought, okay, this is quite serious. And la la. Like, I remember, in 2019, I won it on my dad's birthday. So, So basically, like, it was his birthday that, so like, on that same day, I won the scholarship, and it was like a whole, so like, well, I say party, I was 14, but it was like an evening to enjoy. And then I literally, on the Monday after, I said, like, to all my friends, oh, yeah, guys, like, I won this. And I didn't realize, but after I told my friends on the Monday, on the Tuesday, I was in the assembly hall. Normally in assembly, and I'm on the screen saying, oh yeah, Harry's gone and done this and won this, etc. But what was weird is that in my year group, there's a person also called Harry Rice. And on that same weekend, he won a tournament in rugby. So the whole assembly, like, was based off of Harry Rice's. And it was like such a weird thing to be in, where there's me with racing and there's the other Harry in rugby up there with like a completely broken noser on the screen with a trophy in his hand. Like it was two completely like different things, but it's really cool.
And I bet everyone was asking you, how do I become a driver? How do I do it? How did you do it? You know, what skills does a young racing driver need?
Well, I mean, obviously, over the years, it gets harder and harder every year. Like, as I actually work for the JSCC now as a driver coach, basically, and I'm one of the examiners on the scholarship events for them now. And I've done it for the last 2-3 years now, and every single year, everyone gets better every year. So it's very hard to just to sort of say of how you could be the best, because every year your best gets better. But I just say, because obviously if you go back 30 years as a driver, if you're quick, that was it. Simple as that. But nowadays you have to be good with cameras and media. You have to be incredibly fit. You have to be all over social media, you have to be well presented, you have to speak well. So try not just focus all of your effort purely on driving, because as much as it helps, if you go to like a scholarship event, they don't purely look just how fast you're on a car. They look for, are you a complete driver, as opposed to just being a fast one. So I'd say, personally, for someone like me with a stutter, I think the main thing to train was my media presence, because like even speaking to you now, obviously I have a stutter, but I'm trying to ignore the fact that I'm making those mistakes as I'm trying to think of what else to say. So I'd say for anybody really, it's very easy to be camera shy, as obviously is like having loads of attention on you. Some people absolutely adore it. But other people are thinking, oh, there's cameras on me, now what? And like, they aren't really sure like what to say or do. So focus on media presence, because that's a big thing in the sport these days. And yeah, I just say, make sure that you're always very presentable, and that you try and portray yourself in the best possible way on camera.
Was there any drivers that you'd look up to, or other sports athletes that you'd look up to?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Formula One like is obviously the top notch you can get in motorsport. And my favourite's always been Daniel Ricciardo. He's my favourite driver. And he just has such a character to him. Because as I was just saying, in the sport these days, you have to be very professional. But Daniel somehow manages to be very not unprofessional, but quite colloquial, and he is still who he is anyway. So I think in terms of my personality, I am the most similar to him, like in the way that I can be professional, but at the same time I'm quite sort of loud and vocal. So he was like my main one to focus on, and obviously as my plan in terms of racing is to go into like probably your World Endurance Series, or into your like German side towards the TTM, etc. So in terms of my GT racing heroes, I'd probably say Heavy Pittard's one of them. He's huge over in Germany, because obviously he's an English driver who is very, very successful on the Nürburgring. So I'd say in terms of my career, he's the one that I sort of like quite look up to, and obviously as he's an English driver who's gone overseas and has made himself a career as an English driver in Germany. So I see him as my GT personal career model. But I see Daniel Ricciardo as my like top idol.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Ricciardo. So I can actually see just in your mannerisms and the way you've handled yourself so far, like, and the energy and things like that. Like, you know, I've watched a bit of Drive to Survive, and you know, I've been following Formula One forever. So I know his character to a degree, and yeah, I think it's not a bad bunch to model your game on.
Yeah, true.
Racing is obviously really exciting most of the time, but when it's not, and things go wrong, how do you, especially, you know, yourself having to be kind of in the adult leagues, how did you handle, you know, being the top driver in the young kind of teenager group to then stepping up to the adults and mixing it with those guys and not always come out on top? How did you manage that?
It is obviously a vast change as you're going into a series where people go from 17 to 80 years old, and you are competing against people that all have different levels of experience. They've all got different types of career paths. Whereas in juniors, all of you have done the same thing and you are all competing for the same goal. Whereas in adult racing, people are after the same people. Want to go to different career paths. It's very different. You're competing against those that are 30 years ahead of you. So it is quite a job. But in terms of, as a driver, I try to not think of the people that I'm racing as specific people. If I see a car ahead of me, I don't care who's in that car, I'm going to get past them. It could be easy as someone that's 17, 18 to be quite intimidated by the old competition. So how I try and do it is I try and just focus on purely driving the car to the best that I can and trying not to focus so much on who I'm racing with, because if they're faster than me, they're faster than me. If I'm faster than them, so what? Like, it doesn't really matter who you're racing against. Always try your best to beat them regardless of who they are.
How would you manage it after the race, like privately?
It's obviously an amazing feeling. As every single person wants to be first, but only one person can. So it's the sort of like of a scenario of where try and take small wins. Say you were at your last race, you were sixth, but say in this race weekend you came fourth and got fastest lap. Even though you didn't win the race, that is still progress towards winning a race. Like, try and take certain wins, even if it's not a win, because I'm a driver that obviously aims to win, and I'm quite hard on myself if I don't win. And I've noticed that over the years, the more frustrated you get with yourself over not accomplishing something, it sort of brings down your own confidence. So try and not beat yourself up as a driver. Try to say, okay, I didn't go to plan, but in qualifying in the first race, in the second race, or whatever, what did I do better than before? Take what you did previously, think, oh yeah, that's the improvement. I'm happy with that. And just keep improving, because unless you're as for Dapper nowadays, it's impossible to win everything. So you have to make sure that you're having expectations that are reasonable, because it's impossible to always come out on top. You can have issues with the car that aren't your fault, and you could be out in first by half a minute, and you're thinking, oh yeah, I've won this, fantastic. Oh no, the car's broken down now, and you get angry at yourself. So it's just important to know that external problems don't affect your own ability. So take every small win as it comes.
Yeah, no, I think that's really sound advice. And in terms of the races that you've been involved in, and I suppose the aftercare, do the organisations help the drivers in any way? If they're upset with their losing or the mental health side of things, is there anything there to support people within motorsport?
Yeah, I'd say in terms of the organisation, there's not really an organisation in motorsport that's Hello Motorsport UK, is obviously like, because they run everything. But there are like small clubs that run championships, and they don't personally have any involvement like in the drivers. The teams at the driver is racing with are the ones that have the most impact. So I'd say if the driver has a bad race and they're mentally not doing great because they've had like a bad two or so races in the last month, the team is always there because obviously, as you're a customer, obviously you are there as customer of the team. And if you do badly, then it makes the team look like a subpar team to the others. So it's always in the team's interest to make sure that you are in the best possible mindset for the races ahead. So I'd say the organisers have an involvement in making sure that everything's fair. But in terms of the personal driver mentality, that's more down to the personal teams that you're with.
Yeah, no, I mean, I kind of assumed as much, but I was just checking because it's always interesting to see how perhaps the mental side of motorsport has, has evolved. You know, you've got those butterflies in your stomach. What are some of the pre-race rituals you go through? Like, what does Harry always do?
I'm not a person that's very superstitious. So I just sort of, all I really tend to do in terms of my performance is I'll just get in the car a tiny bit earlier than you need to, and I'll just sit in the car and just sort of take it all in. As like, it's very easy as a racing driver to think, oh yeah, I'm racing, cool, IndyCar, go. But if you sort of sit in your car and just sort of like, just think about of the reason why you're doing it. Like, I try and get in the car like a little bit early and just like sit there like in the assembly area and just think, I'm here for a reason. If it goes badly, that doesn't mean that I'm off course, off my goals. I just have to put my focus to where it needs to be. If it's an amazing race, good. And I can keep it in my experience books of a good weekend. If it goes badly, take the bad from it, take the good from it, and then separate it into the keep box and the throwaway box. So I don't necessarily have a pre-race ritual or routine. I just try to get in the car, absorb the atmosphere of being in a race car, and make sure that my goals are straight.
Okay. And so I spoke to another driver recently, and I was asking them about what it's actually like when the lights go out and it's like, go, go, go.
Yeah.
How would you describe that feeling?
It's sort of like a sinking feeling, like, or like a bad one, but it's like when you're sat at the, like, sat, there's cars surrounding you on the grid, as soon as the lights go off, like, you sort of, like, sink into, like, this serious mindset, like, as you're sat on the grid, so, like, all nervous thinking, oh, God, like, is this really going to happen? Like, am I actually here racing on these cars around me? But as soon as the lights go off, like your mindset just switches and you go from this confused driver into someone that is set and focused. So it's the sort of feeling that you know you have a job to do. Like you're here to the best that you possibly can for you, your team, your family, etc. So you haven't got time to sort of like be thinking about external things, like obviously like your work, your family, your friends. You just have to set all of your mental energy onto now and here so that you can put in a performance that you're proud of. So I'd say the feeling is sharp concentration. You sort of like everything else around you just sort of like disappears, and like as obviously as in like everything, like your work, friends, etc. And yeah, mind's always busy. There's always things to think about, things to worry about, things to try and sort out. But as soon as you get into that race car and the lights go off and you go for the first corner, everything just turns off, and it's like and it's like your own little world, and it's like probably the best feeling in the world. as you have nothing else to worry about and you can just focus purely on what you have to do.
I was going to say that. I was going to say a lot of people describe it as bliss because in that moment, as you just described, there's no other distractions in life.
Yeah.
It's just you, the road, and the other competitors. I mean, being out on the track then, what's some of the scariest moments that you've encountered whilst racing?
Scariest? I've had a couple of suspension failures in my time. Racing in junior years. And obviously, like, it's not ideal of when your suspension's collapsed and you're turning the wheel when the car's not turning and you're heading towards a barrier. That's obviously not a very nice thing to think about. But I'd say the scariest is when you're racing with someone that you're closer in a championship. For example, say last year, I was racing in the Porsche Boxster Championship. And in the series, there is more than one class of car. And I was competing in a Class 3 car in a Class 2 race. So the car that I was in was about two and a half to three seconds per lap off the pace of all of the other cars. And it was incredibly frustrating where somewhere the first race was at Hurlingham Park was the first race. And you're racing on the grid, hoping that every single person around you has the tools to beat you. Like being in a car that's underpowered, overweight, undergripped, etc., etc. And you're sitting there thinking, why am I doing it? Like, I have no chance of being anywhere, so why am I bothering? But then, because the lights go off and the race starts, there was 13 cars on the grid. In quali, I started, I think, 7th. And in my first ever race in a car on slicks, and my first ever race in a car that's rear-wheel drive, I came 3rd. But being in the car that I was, I knew that I didn't deserve to be there. And like Isaiah was like some external factors, like with some other people having car problems. And there was other people so like having on-track differences. So as cool as it was to have that trophy for being 3rd, I like in my head, I knew that wasn't a genuine 3rd. So I guess it's quite hard to stay positive when you are competing on a grid in a car that is way off the pace. So like you just sort of like sink into the seat and goes, is it really bothering? But yeah. If I didn't bother, then I wouldn't have been able to capitalize from those other people's misfortunes. So I got 3rd place, like it's on, like, and I have the hope to prove it. But so even if things don't seem like they go into plan and like the car's not set up the way you want it to be, or the car's off the pace, don't count yourself out because external things can happen. They can bring you back into it.
I think that's a really awesome story, especially as, you know, being in a somewhat slower car can actually be scary in the sense that if there's any bit of danger, you know, you don't have the power to get out of trouble or anything like that. So congrats, man. And equally, what's been your proudest moment? Would it be the scholarship on your father's birthday or what's your call?
I mean, obviously, I'm sure that his proudest is obviously on his birthday. So obviously, after I won the scholarship, I got a podium in the JSCC in my 2nd year. I got 2 podiums in the year after that in the Perrit Car Trophy Championship. And then I got a podium in the Porsche Club. So it's hard to say because I've had podiums in everything that I've raced in. Some I earned. Some, obviously, as I was just saying to you, some I don't feel like I personally deserved.
Yeah.
But I'd say in 2020, I got my first podium, and that was a podium that I personally felt like I earned. So I'd say out of all of the things that I'd done, it was up in Scotland, actually. It was pouring down with rain, obviously, because it's in Scotland, all weekend. And it's a circuit that I've always loved. And I started on the grid, I think, sixth. After lap two, I was in fourth. And then it was just chasing down third, lap after lap, chasing, and just like seeing the car ahead of us get bigger and bigger. Like I felt like I could do it. And then in one of the hairpins, I just went, like, what's going for it? And I just sent it. And it worked. And then I came around in third. And like, as this was my second year in the championship, like everyone went ballistic. Like, even the parents of the other kids. So I'd say that was probably the best feeling, because I know that was a race where I delivered. Of course, the scholarship is obviously like another huge thing. But the scholarship, as fantastic as it was, being as a racing driver, getting a first podium in a racing environment is an exciting thing, as you're competing and you've earned that as a racing driver. Whereas obviously on these scholarship day, it's about your fitness, your media, your driving, and there's other aspects to it. So as a driver, I knew that after I won it, I knew that I was somewhat complete, but I never knew that I had the ability to go and finish the podium. So I'd say, as a complete driver, it was fantastic to win the scholarship. But as a racing driver, wanting to race at the highest level I possibly can, getting that first podium was like I could do this moment.
You touched on it a little bit earlier on, but how do you set up a race car?
There's loads of different things, like, because in certain cars you can change certain things. In other race cars, you can't change certain things. So it depends on the car, really, that you're racing in. Because if you're racing in a Formula One car, you can't change much because of the regulations. And it's the same in the JSCC. Like, because it's a road car, you're very limited. But in the Porsche Club, you can change, like, the springs, the damping, the ride height, the way that the car will bounce off of a curb. There's like a hell of a lot that goes into it. So, and obviously this is why all teams have mechanics and have these race engineers, because personally, if I try to set up a car, I'll be like, what the hell? Because I'm not incredibly mechanically clever. Like, if I'm driving this car and the car's not doing what I want it to do, I know exactly what to say to my mechanic to make the changes necessary. But in regards to changing the specifics, he would know obviously better than me because he's the mechanic. But I'd say it's very important to know your own driving style, because there's people that like a car to understeer at the front, so safer car. There's people that prefer a car to oversteer, so that the car's more sharp on the front end, which is easier to make a mistake with, but it can be quicker. Personally, I prefer a car that's like a little bit sort of dancing on the rear, so into like a sharper corner, it's easier to get the car pitched quicker. Depending on how your driving style is will depend on how you want the car to be set up. So it's important to work out your preferences as quick as possible, so the team around you can have the car set up the way you like it, because everyone likes different things from a car. So
yeah, 100%. I think that's really helpful, and that will help people learn more about what goes into setting up the cars. And, you know, every driver has their favourite conditions to drive in.
Yeah.
What's yours?
Well, my podium in Scotland was in monsoon conditions. Obviously, all drivers will prefer to be the driver because you could obviously go a lot quicker and push the car harder. But in the wet, it takes a lot more patience and it takes more precision. And I think if it was like a qualifying session where I'm trying to go for the outright fastest lap, I'd prefer it in the drive because you have the chance to properly go for it. But I think for a racing scenario, I think it's more enjoyable in the wet because it's more unpredictable. And personally, I think as a driver, I am more suited to the conditions in the wet anyway. So I do prefer racing in the rain because it's sort of more suited to my driving style, which is quite smooth and quite consistent. Whereas a person that would prefer a dry session is a driver that is blisteringly quick but could be possibly prone to a mistake. Because obviously, if a driver doesn't like the wet, it means that they're probably prone to a mistake. Because in the wet, there's a much smaller margin for error because you have to obviously go at a much lower speed. But the circuit conditions can be different at every corner. So it's all about adapting to the circuit that you're on in the conditions that you're racing in.
And where's been your favourite circuit that you've raced on?
Favourite circuit that I've raced on? Are we including places where I've coached? Because there's a couple circuits where I haven't personally raced on, but I've worked on as a driver coach. So I work at Thruxton Racing Centre as a coach. It's a very fun track. Down at Thruxton. It's the fastest circuit in the UK. So it's a very, very high risk track. So I just enjoy the high speeds of racing at Thruxton. But my favourite circuit is in Scotland. It's called the Arkhill Racing Circuit. It's a really short track. It's there's one corner like this and one like that afterwards. So it's a very undulating track. And I like enjoy the sort of the bumps of the track and like it's more involved to me. Whereas somewhere like probably Sanderton. Like it's a fun track, but it's very flat. It's not boring because obviously if you're in a race car, it's impossible to get bored. But out of all of the tracks I've raced on in terms of enjoyability, I'd probably say that's towards the lower end because it hasn't got the undulation changes and the camber for the corners. I enjoy circuits that are quite eventful.
I would love to see that out on those tracks. And, you know, obviously I drive a car, but I can't quite race one like you can. I know you're still racing now and you just picked up on it a moment ago as a coach. What's it like being a driving instructor and helping, you know, everyday people just get behind these beasts?
It's actually quite strange. Like, as obviously I work at Roxton, I also work at Silverstone as a coach as well. And you, kind of as a racing driver, like you don't quite understand the level that you are on. Like, I know like that sounds quite bigoted, but obviously like as a racing driver, you have all like this huge experience book of the things you've raced, of the cars you've driven. And like, you don't actually seem to realise that people that just going cars to work and back, they don't really know what to do. Like as I said, they haven't actually been in that scenario before. Whereas obviously to me and others like me, it's like a job. It's just every day to us. So, but I must admit, it is quite enjoyable, like seeing a person go from your normal everyday motorway commuter to actually getting them onto like some sort of quick sore laps. And obviously, it's enjoyable as your experience and your expertise is going into somebody else and they're learning from you. And it's quite a nice feeling when you're teaching somebody and they're actually gaining some knowledge for you. It's obviously to race the car is amazing, but to pass on your skill set and see somebody doing well from learning from your experience is quite a enjoyable thing to do.
Yeah. I can imagine that it's a nice feeling to see someone go, oh, Harry, I did what you said and I got an extra like half a second And, as a racer, as a coach, as a man in motorsport, what's your favourite car and why?
My favourite road car or race car?
Oh, let's go for race.
Race car. I like GT3s. Obviously, as awesome as Formula 1 is, I'm more taken by the GT3 route. Aston Martin just released their new Advantage, and I do think that does look pretty damn cool. So it's probably either an Aston Martin Advantage Evo GT3, or I do quite like the R8s as well. The Audi R8 GT4s and 3s also look really, really good.
And do you think you'll be able to get behind the wheel? Let me say that again. And can you see yourself getting behind the wheel of one of them?
One of them, possibly. Obviously, I'm going to say yes. Because I'm in that point of my career now where I am looking to move up somewhere. So I'd like to. Obviously, it's just down to money. Because obviously, when you first come into motorsport, obviously you aren't getting paid for it. You have to pay to do it. So it's incredibly limited to budget. So I would love to think that I would be able to get there based off of my talent alone, but obviously you do have to factor in the funding side of it as well. So in terms of my funding currently, no chance, but in terms of my optimism, yes, I would love to.
And how difficult is it to fund a career as a race driver?
Not an impossible nowadays, as I know people from before COVID who would like say to me, oh yeah, I've just got 150 grand off this company, sweet. Whereas nowadays, it's you like speak to a company, and it's for some reason the word sponsorship is quite a dirty word. It's like if you say sponsorship to a company, they think, oh yeah, I'm giving you money and you go play sport. Awesome. But in motorsport, there's so many chances for networking. There's chances to go and meet new people, go and see new businesses. And on the other part of it, it's the experience of it. Like, you are partnering with a racing driver or racing team, and you get to take your customers or your employees out to this awesome environment full of race cars, and you could even go into these race cars and be taken around the circuit with the person that you're sponsoring. Like, there's so much more involved in motorsport partnerships than companies seem to realise. So in terms of sponsorship, currently I haven't actually got a single sponsor. I've been trying for probably 3-4 years now. And as soon as I say sponsorship, then they go, yeah, bye, and just end the call straight away. So it's obviously there are people out there obviously who have sponsorship, but as a person that has no family involvement in the sport, I don't really have any sort of leverage to say, oh yeah, my parents own this motoring company who you can sort of get in touch with and you can do business together. I sort of have to start from ground zero. And it's tricky because obviously now I'm at that career of where I'm trying to make that jump. And that jump is a huge gap in a budget from where I am now. So it's very difficult. I'd say it's probably easier racing in Europe than it is in England. I'd say England is the hardest country in the world to race in terms of funding, because obviously sponsorship is a dirty word here. Whereas if you go out to a company in Europe and ask them for sponsorship, racing over there is a lot more driver-focused. A sponsor is a lot more keen to sponsor a driver to see them come on the podium and to in races, whereas in the UK, companies are sort of more focused on themselves, really. obviously, it's probably not the best thing to say, but it seems to be the way that it seems to roll, really. Obviously, sponsors are always out there. It's just saying the right thing to the right people.
And with that in mind, have you considered going to Europe or racing in Europe?
I have a lot. for racing this year, we are currently looking towards a European option. Yeah, I can't say obviously what it is yet because we haven't signed anything. But currently our plans are looking towards the European side of the sport because it's just a much easier environment to get involved in. Because even in England, there's not a whole load of things to race in. Like if you want to race in a car that's rear-wheel drive, you have the Porsche Cayman Sprint, which is 200k a year. Or you've got the Chinettas, which goes from, I think, 80 to 150. Or you've got BMW 1 Series, which is like 13 grand. So there's a huge disparity, and there's not really anything sort of like in that mid-range price. Whereas out in Europe, there's things that cost 10 grand and there's things that cost 10 million quid. But you have those, but you have those gaps. Like you have those championships that are cost effective and that are reasonably priced. Whereas in the UK, you have this. You haven't got that playing field in the middle. So whereas in terms of funding, that's what I need to look for. And that's why my plans are currently going European. We haven't got anything yet, like confirmed, but that is where we're looking.
And just to manage people's knowledge of motorsport and things like that, at the level that you compete at, are there people who are still in full-time jobs and things like that?
Oh, you do get some of the older drivers who are, like as a lot of the people that are around my age from 18 to probably 24, they're self-employed like myself. So we are full-time self-employed. But obviously, as we're self-employed, we can choose when to work. So we can choose to say, sorry, I'm racing, I can't work. Where the people that are still employed fully, obviously, are the older generation of drivers who are looking to go into these big things as amateurs, is what they're classed as AM drivers. But yeah, I'd say you don't see many. Obviously, yeah, there's loads of self-employed coaches that are full-time self-employed, but that doesn't quite count as in the way you mean it. So
yeah,
in terms of fully employed, very rarely. You do get some people that own businesses. Technically, they are still in full-time work, but they own a business, so they have more time to spare.
Yeah.
So
no, the reason I asked is because I wanted to just quickly find out about prize money, and I was thinking, are there people, you know, who race who, as you just touched on, are a little bit older, so they're trying to just do this for the prize money?
Yeah, well, in terms of prize money, there's hardly any in my sport, really. There's a couple, and I mean a couple. There's one championship in France called the Alpine Cup, and that's about £120,000 a year. And in terms of the prizes in that, they actually seem rather generous. But in terms of that, I can't actually think of anything that hands out prize money. Like, obviously, if you're in F1 or you race in GT World Challenge, you are a paid driver and you earn a salary from that. So that is essentially prize money in a way. But you don't exactly earn prize money for coming first in a race unless you are a paid driver.
No, that will definitely, you know, raise a few eyebrows because
yeah.
I think it looks glamorous and people assume that, you know, every driver, it's just like, you know, in any sport, every athlete is well to do and, you know, everyone's living the high life, but it's good to be honest and say, look, You know, it costs an extortionate amount to even be a driver, maintain your car, take part in the championships. But on top of that, there's actually little to no prize money. So, you know, you're racing for the respect and the love of the sport, really.
Essentially that. And obviously, like, if you're seen to be racing at a somewhat high level and you're obviously then doing well, obviously, like, you're spending tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds of your own money to race. So, and you're putting all of that money into the hope of being paid one day, because there's only a certain amount of racing seats that are paid, and it's very hard to actually get them because every single driver in the world is looking for them same 100 seats. And you really have to, and obviously the important bit is you have to have the cash in the first place to race somewhere where you can be scouted. You really have to be racing in something of GT4 upwards to even get sort of seen, and that's 100k plus each. So you have to have that in the initial funding in the first place to even get noticed. Anyway, so it's like a lot of hard work, and you're putting a lot of a bucket into yourself, because obviously these tens of thousands of pounds, you could buy a new car, buy a house, whatever. But no, you're choosing it to put it into your career that won't even work out. So it's like a head of a lot of self-belief that goes into it, because if you're spending all this money and you don't believe you can do it, then there's no point doing it in the first place.
And that when you just compared it then to like buying a house or something like that, that really is a powerful message, because it's like, you know, someone's choosing to either a house or a car, and they're going, right, I'm going straight for the car.
It's a crazy prospect.
That's right. And just to kind of wrap up then, for any like young fans who want to be the next Ho Rice or want to be the next Daniel Ricciardo, what's the best car for them to start out in?
Obviously, in terms of your age, obviously, say you're 10 or 11, I want to go into karting. Corporate karting's okay, but if you can, try and get into owner karting, which is basically teams that own karts. You hire basically from a team or buy your own. And you become part of a karting club, and you race in this club for a championship, and you gain experience that way, because karting in the lower levels is cheaper than car racing, of course. But try and not stay too long in karting, because I know people that are 17, 18 that pay twice what you will pay for cars. I've seen people pay half a million pounds a year for karting. So try and not stay in karting for too long, because it will only get you so far. As soon as you're 14, go to cars. Obviously, it's a very big step, but try to have a tiny bit of testing possibly before you go to your first race, so you're more confident in the car you're in. And obviously, the important bit is just enjoy it. Like, it's a process. Every single driver has their own pathway, but they have their own process. So enjoy your path. Obviously, some things might not go your way. Believe me, I've been there. But it's your will to keep going after the bad's happened that actually shape who you are as a driver. So I'd say don't let things that have happened sort of like shy you away from the sport. There's bad in every sport. There's bad everywhere. But there's also a hell of a lot more good than there is bad. So try and not get so disappointed by things that have happened. And the important bit is just keep going. I mean, obviously, I'm now 19 years old now, and I started karting when I was 6. So it's taken me a hell of a long time to get from my first introduction to motorsport to where I am now. So just enjoy the process, because everyone has their own journey. and just try to make the right choices, because obviously people choose to go down the route of Formula One. People go down the route of four-wheel drive TCR racing or touring cars. People go down the route of racing in GT3s. People go to rallycross, rallying. There's so many different pathways. So find the pathway that you like the most and just put your heart and soul into it. Even if in the end it doesn't work out, you kind of leave knowing that you did everything you could.
No, I think that's a beautiful message. And last one, what does the future of motorsport look like to you?
Oh, I love God. To me, it looks like, well, my ultimate goal is to race in the German series called TTM, because over my life, I've competed in tennis, rugby. I spent 3 years boxing, and I do, as an athlete, I'm quite a individual sportsman, whereas a lot of other people do things like rugby, football, or head of a team. I enjoy the team atmosphere, but I don't like my own failure to be because of other people. Whereas, obviously, in a team playing football, you could have the absolute best game of your life and play fantastically. But if your team has a bad game, you have been sort of pulled down with them. So as a driver of racing in GT racing, you have like a lot of co-drivers. Whereas in Germany, the TTM Championship, it's the only single driver one out there in GT3s. So I'm trying to go into that sort of side where, like, if I make a mistake, it's my fault. Simple as that. Whereas I hate the feeling of making no mistakes, but I don't get the result that I want because of someone else's mistake, if that makes sense. So I'm hoping to end up in that series, but obviously from now it's a long way to it. I'm currently 19. I'm hoping to be over there in DTM by about 25. I'm hoping younger, obviously, but I'm going to aim for like 23, 24, but 25, I would like to be in there.
I think that's a great thing to aim for. And listen, I think this has been a really awesome chat. You know, you've been really open. You've kind of raised my eyebrows a few times because I didn't appreciate certain aspects of motorsport. And that's why I love doing these conversations. Yeah, no, I think people will take a lot from this, Harry, you know, especially just around about your story and how cool it's been, and that what you've accomplished really is quite incredible given, you know, the age you started at and the age you are now and kind of where you're headed. So no, thank you so much for your time today, mate.
Thank you for having me.
What a fantastic story. I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. Athlete's Blueprint is continuing to grow and pick up momentum, so please continue to support the podcast. Follow the Athlete's Blueprint social media channels. That way you'll continue to get a wide variety of insights from amateur to professional coaches and players worldwide. Again, I'm your host JP. Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.